Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Random Chatter. This is our new show for this week. This is number 354. And we don't have a ton of new. This is kind of a cross between lightning round and top three, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a top two and then a half lightning round. It's a hybrid episode.
It's a hybrid.
It's an amalgamation.
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. Let's start off with, I guess, the number one thing we're going to talk about here, which is Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson is suing Disney over, I guess, revenue, right? What it boils down to is that her lawyers feel that Disney has breached the contract that they had with her to do this movie and have it released exclusively in theaters. And now with the pandemic going on and the hybrid way of releasing movies, it's being released in theaters and on Disney Plus premium access.
Yeah.
And they're saying it's leaving money on the table for Scarlett. I mean, she came out and mentioned she made $20 million on the film.
But I think she's saying that she's losing.
That's her base.
She's
pay.
Losing right. $50 million based on.
I didn't say the number. I knew she was losing money on top of that because she's guaranteed money based on.
She had
on
like a flat.
Office.
Yeah. But then, so the argument, the two sides of the coin here, and then we'll kind of talk amongst ourselves about it. Allegedly, she's losing about $50 million because it's not being released directly in theaters. And then it had a severe drop in the second week. And it kind of links up with a lot of the news about the new COVID. It's not even a new COVID variant, but the Delta variant. The argument is that Disney is actually making money by not having to pay the people who were on a point system as much by releasing it through streaming, and that then that also increases their overall subscriber rate, which gives them additional money in the long term. And then there were a couple of websites who pointed out that it appears, and I didn't see this in any of the documentation I saw, but I never saw the complete filing either. It appears they're also trying to sue for a portion of subscription revenue, which, if that's true, that's a whole different level of controversy. But even setting that aside for the moment, there's kind of this dilemma about the contract never specifically said anything about streaming because it wasn't really a thing when the contract was signed. And keep in mind, this movie has been in the works for a while now. And I don't think this premium service even existed back when the contracts were being made for this movie. It's kind of like Joe Straczynski, JMS, when he did Babylon 5, he had the rights for the syndication, and I think he had the rights for home video on VHS. DVDs weren't a thing. And then the series ended, DVDs were in production. He doesn't get a penny for any of this, and he wrote almost all the episodes. He directed at least three of the five seasons. Like, he worked his butt off on that series. He, I think, holds a Guinness Book of World Records for something about the writing or directing on it and stuff. Gets nothing. And it's a similar sort of thing. It didn't exist when this contract was written. So does she actually have a legal claim to any of that? Or was Disney just taking, I don't want to say taking advantage, but was Disney just doing what it needed to do for the situation? I do have to say, it is pretty convenient that Disney doesn't have to pay as much to people now. So the argument holds up to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, that is one way to look at it. But, you know, the other thing is, too, I mean, everybody, Disney included, is feeling effects in the pandemic. Yeah. And I'm not trying to say, oh, poor making so much money. But, you know, at the same time, they're trying to do things to stay afloat. And I wish these kind of things would be more common sense driven, or at least fairness driven. I mean, you know, you mentioned the JMS thing, and that really sucks. And it's like, so what do you need to make sure you write into your contract now that 50 years from now, whatever telepathy based, you know,
when holographic projection shows up in people's living room. Yeah.
I mean, fair is fair. I mean, you should get part of the rights to whoever's being distributed, not just based on what we have today.
And I think that's the point. Like, why aren't the people who get paid on the points, when we talk about a point-based system, okay, so for those who don't know how this works, the big actors, they're going to get like an upfront amount. Like Jim Carrey, when he does a movie, he gets $20 million right out of the gate, whether the movie does well, whether it tanks, whatever, he gets paid up front. Other people, they'll get...
That's the example you're leading with, is yes. Jim Carrey.
I was trying to find something that wasn't directly Marvel related, so we wouldn't fall down the, well, what about this and that and this and that? You know, Mel Gibson, Steve Carell, whoever, they get, whoever the like the lead stars are, they're going to get a certain amount, and then also points, and points are a percentage. A lot of times fractions of percentages. The lesser actors typically get only points. The third and fourth tier actors get like tiny, tiny, tiny little fractions of points. And then extras get like squat. So there are a lot of times you can be in a movie. You might even have speaking lines and actually do things in the movie and get paid nothing. Because even with the percentages,
I was just going to say, when you hear folks talk about residuals, that's basically it. That's the payment that they're receiving based on points. Sorry.
Because that'll continue over time too. That can, depending on how the contract is written, include home theater releases, appearances on HBO, Cinemax, NBC or TNT, things like that. Yeah. So residuals, that money can keep coming in. So it can be quite lucrative if the movie's successful and is evergreen, meaning it has a long life after that. But keep in mind that point system also, the production studio gets paid first. The distribution studio gets paid first. The advertisers get paid first. The producers who put money into investing in it get paid first. So, you know, whatever's left is what you get points on. So I think the argument here is, like, for us, the layman's argument is, why can't Disney just give her some of the points of what they made on the streaming purchases? Because then, like, yeah, it's not the same as the box office, but it's something. And we all get, you know, the pandemic's happening, COVID's happening, and we need to be reasonable. But that seems like a good compromise, right? Now, Tim, I know you keep up with the Marvel stuff really, really heavily. What's your take on what you've read and where you kind of stand in how this works? Because it is a little tricky. Disney needs to make money. They're in a tough spot. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get what they wanted to out of this film. And yet, the people who actually worked on and in the film also need to get paid.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's one of those things that I see both sides of it. First of all, the industry has to evolve to better accommodate for basically all means of distribution. And so it's kind of one of those things where I think that, you know, default language in contracts simply needs to say any and all means of distribution. And it's then understood that it's based on what we have today. And if something new is developed 2 years from now, it's also going to include that. So there's, you know, and it's, there are a lot of different sides to this. So, you know, obviously, and we had talked about it for a while over on Guardians. Kevin Feige for months was saying, this is only going to theaters. This is only going to theaters. This is only going to theaters.
Right.
Disney at some point called him up and said, hey, Kev, we're going to do a day and date simultaneous on Disney Plus. And he said, no, you're not. And they said, yes, we are. And he says, okay, you pay me. And so there it is. He hasn't directly come out after this whole lawsuit thing, but there is a rumor milling about that basically he's pretty unhappy with it and he's kind of embarrassed.
My understanding is as of today he has.
Oh, he's officially?
I think, now I could be wrong. I don't have a source in front of me. But I did see something where he came out in support of Scarlett Johansson and it wasn't very, it was carefully worded, I guess he tweeted something that was like not going to burn bridges with him and Disney, but was also very clearly in Scarlett Johansson's court. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to think that, I mean, aside from being very, very touchy and the fact that we've got, you know, lawyers involved with this kind of thing, you know, we're in uncharted territory, and you know, Disney's going to do what's best for their pocketbook, and the actors are going to do what's best for their pocketbook, and you know, we don't have any track record of how this kind of thing is handled. Now, I mean, you know, Screen Actors Guild has, you know, contracted pay scales for what these people make in a movie, and there's daily rates, there's weekly rates, and so forth, and they have to get paid that by contract because you're part of the union, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are unionized employees, even though you don't think about somebody who gets paid millions of dollars as a unionized employee, but they are. And you know how this gets done with the extra stuff being released in on television, and you know, I mean, the right thing to do would be Disney to say, hey, you know what, we're gonna have you share in our streaming revenue to make up for what you're losing in, you know, box office revenue, right? But, you know,
well, here's why I think
that's just too logical for why would, you know, lawyers would be involved. That's not going to happen. So.
Well, so to your point, that would work great for something like Warner Brothers, for HBO Max. With Disney, there are customers who specifically paid an additional $30 to specifically go toward the Black Widow movie. Now, HBO Max, maybe there's no other way to do it. So, okay, you know, you get a certain percentage of subscriber rates for a certain percentage of time or something like that. And so that works, I guess, and that would be really rough. But for this, it's more clean and clear cut. Like,
it's very clean.
$30 per purchase, this is the equivalent of the people spending two movie tickets. So there you go. Like, exactly. It could not be a simpler equivalency. Yeah. Just handle it that way. Pretend each purchase was two movie tickets and treat it accordingly. I don't know why this needs to be such a big thing. And I'm not saying one side is right or the other. I'm saying that this seems like a really easy thing to solve. And I'm sure it'll get settled out of court. But I kind of feel like Disney could have already like proactively resolved this. Because here's the other thing. Emma Stone.
They could have and they should
have.
And actually, before we get to Emma Stone, I just want to say with this, the other side of this, and the thing that I don't like that ScarJo's attorneys are fundamentally basing her quote lost revenue over, is they're basically equating the Disney Plus revenue directly equating that over to a box office. And you know, I'm sorry, but that's particularly in the pandemic, that doesn't translate.
I agree.
If this was a box office only release, I still would not have seen the movie. I would not have gone to a theater. And for as much of a Marvel nut as I am, I would not have been there.
Because of the pandemic. If there was no pandemic, you would.
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
If there was no pandemic, right. None of this would be an issue.
Right.
Yeah.
This movie pulled $60 million in its first weekend on Disney Plus. At most, I would say half of that would have gone over. But again, you have the issue of the pandemic, and so there's people like me who simply would not have gone to the theater. And I think there's a fair amount of folks who would have foregone that.
Right? And I know that there are some, for the time being, some people, like Joe in the chat room said that they had 10 people over at their house watching it at once. I assume like family members and, you know, I'm sure Joe was like safe COVID wise about it, but I know there were viewing parties or people with households with, you know, two parents, three kids, you know, so there's still a loss there. It's still not a perfect equivalency, but
right,
you know,
yeah. But you would think that, I mean, level-headed people would make this come out to be equitable for both sides and be fair, and be, you know. But and you know, I can say this because, you know, Tom's not here, but you know, lawyers get involved, and you know,
we love you,
all
Tom.
All kinds of bad things happen.
Yeah,
it's just you know, I mean, I know that, you know, lawyer's job is to maximize the benefit for their client, and I understand that. But at some points, like, this is, like Garrick said, not that hard of a decision to say this should be based on what you're taking for that movie.
Here's the interesting thing for me. I think Scarlett Johansson in the end is going to win. They'll settle it. But here's why. Marvel had...
I think Disney has to concede something.
Disney...
It is basically... It's what's fair in this, and big, you know, corporations don't always do what's fair.
But
I think that this is a relationship, and it's high profile enough that they need to maintain.
The thing. They lost face with Mulan about the thanking the area in China and the credits that people are like thanking them. What they're like killing people. What's wrong with you? There's wasn't there some sort of an issue about pay for the writers in the writer room for I think it was Captain America and Winter Soldier or Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think it was.
Well, I don't know.
One of the series, where there were some discrepancies about that. There have been other situations about Disney not paying writers for things, and now this, and Disney has no bigger theatrical cash cow than Marvel. I mean, we're all Star Wars fans, but let's face it, it's Marvel. Right.
And you were going to mention Emma Stone also, Eric. Go ahead.
So apparently, I don't know all the details on this, but there are well-substantiated rumors that while it hasn't come out yet because it's still in the process of being filed, that Emma Stone from Cruella is doing the same thing for the same reasons, loss of her payment.
Right.
Based on the fact that it was direct to streaming. And did that one even hit the, I think that one did hit theaters, didn't it?
I don't recall. Remember. I think it did.
Didn't do well in theaters because that was still earlier on. A lot of theaters weren't open. There were no theaters.
Right. But the thing Disney's got to be careful of here is that if this goes through with ScarJo and she wins, it's going to open up the floodgates for everybody else. And that's why they should have done something earlier to say, let's make this fair.
Yeah.
So that we're not going to get taken to the cleaners down the road if somebody else wins this because,
the only thing I can see them doing is taking that $30 and saying, we're going to treat that like two movie tickets. Part of it will come out for, you know, the network infrastructure for streaming or something like that, just like it would have come out for distributing the films physically to the theaters or something, like whatever logistical costs are in that. Okay, keep that similar. And everything else gets broken up between the actors. Like Joe in the chat room with 10 people watching it at once. Well, I mean, that's a loss. Sorry, we have a pandemic. Deal with it. But in the meantime... That seems fair. So yes, it opens up the floodgates for everybody else to come in. But if they can come up with a system and say, listen, this is our plan, this is what we're going to do, I think that then people fighting against that plan aren't going to look like the good guys as much, because that's a pretty darn reasonable plan.
Right.
I think that's really what's going to save face for them. Because right now, Disney has a brand imaging issue with this. People love Marvel. So avid moviegoers love Marvel, if not more than Disney, then at least like it's really close right now. It's not always been the case, and it won't always be the case. But at the moment, Marvel is like the untouchable franchise. Disney's been more hit or miss.
Yeah. And the thing is here is that, you know, obviously the company is going to adapt to maximize their profits. And through this pandemic, we have seen that this heavy push into streaming and premium stuff like what Disney Plus has done, it's a smart move. It works. It makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
What they should have integrated into this, though, and the thing is, Disney is not the only offender in this. Warner Brothers had the same issue with Wonder Woman 84 when they said, oh, hey, you know what? We're going to put this up on HBO Max.
Right. Yeah.
And when you have the big stars who their pay is considerably based upon box office numbers, and suddenly, and like they don't even have a say in this, like they're left looking around like, wait, you guys just stripped our box office numbers. Like, what?
Yeah.
We just took a huge cut in pay.
Yeah.
So the companies who are doing this, and I think that a lot of this, what it comes down to is that there is, it's almost kind of a labor law type of a thing, and it's a contractual thing. And I think that there is the intent of the contracts, and I'm not an attorney with this, but the intent of the contract is to pay these people a whatever their prevailing wage is associated with the distribution of the film. Box office mm-hmm. has been the primary measure of distribution for frickin' decades.
Right.
That's obviously changing. And I think that the courts kind of at this point, because if the studios aren't going to make this decision on their own, or at least uniformly do so, I think the courts, unfortunately, are going to need to step in and they're going to have to say, okay, look, distribution is distribution. If you're making money off of the distribution, which right. you should be, then your people get a part of that. And it may be a separate point system than the box office. You know, the box office exactly. may be yeah. 0.5%, whereas streaming is only going to be 0.25%. Okay, that's fine, but yeah. it's still something.
And you know, Tim, I mean, Disney may come back and say, look, we're not making money off this. We're just stemming our losses. Which may very well be the case. But I mean, Disney could have also, you know, turned the tables and said, look, we're going to release this in the theaters. Good luck in the pandemic because no one's going to go see it. And then release mm-hmm. it on streaming service for $30 3 months from then or whatever their time frame in the contract is.
So,
and mm-hmm. they could have done that that way. And then nobody would have been had any like.
But here's the flip side of that, Lou. Black Widow's the number one pirated movie this year. If you release it in theaters,
right.
and of course theaters, yep. digital distribution now. So pirating from a theater is not, I mean, sometimes it is, but it's not as bad as back in the day of the old, you know, the handy cam with the person sitting in the seats doing this at the right. screen. Like it's right. not like that yep. anymore. So you can argue that they would have lost even more had they done it. Like it's a good way yep. to get the point across to the viewers and stuff and to the people involved in the contracts. But here's the other thing too. Again, there's all of the legal stuff that Tim was just talking about, but Disney also has a brand imaging issue here too. People like Scarlett Johansson. People love Marvel. People worship at the altar of Kevin Feige. This could blow up for Disney big time. Like a lot of people are looking at this and it's like our parents are getting divorced. Mm. Like that's the mm-hmm. public perception of this right now. That's not a good place for Disney to be. And Scarlett Johansson has nothing to lose at this point because I don't know what her contract looks like for future upcoming movies. But spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the second Avengers Infinity War movie Endgame, she's kind of dead a little bit. So like she has nothing to lose as a professional, as an actress. She doesn't have to worry about, oh, they might not bring me back for the next Avengers movie. Well, no, they're not bringing her back for the next Avengers movie. She's done. So she's got nothing to lose. Disney, on the other hand,
right.
This is going to, it's not like irreparable. It's not going to do them in, but like, it does not look good for them. And people don't want their parents fighting. Yeah. They want them to like kiss and make up and get this over with so we can get back to enjoying Marvel stuff. And it's kind of on Disney to figure out how to fix this.
Yeah.
So we should probably move along.
We'll stay tuned. I'll just say, let's move along and move off this topic, but we'll see how this turns out probably as weeks go ahead. So
probably pretty soon, I think.
I would think so.
Yeah.
You guys are both Doctor Who fans. I know Eric is. Tim, I'm not sure if you watch it.
I used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know anymore.
Why not?
Listen, Peter Capaldi, the first season was rough. The second season actually was okay. The last season with Clara, though I think they missed the boat in writing her as a good companion. She had a lot of potential, and I think the writing kind of sucked. And then his last season kind of sucked until the very, very end was really good. And then everything with Jodie Whittaker so far, I feel, has kind of sucked. And I've been trying to be optimistic. Really? I've got that one Christmas special still to catch up on. And otherwise, too many companions, too lackluster a job at making us connect with or care about any of them. And to be clear, it's not on the actors. It's not on Jodie Whittaker. I blame the writing and the showrunner. I am unimpressed. Yeah. It's not just that I'm unimpressed. So Chris Chibnall, I guess, is the showrunner.
I think so.
He may be a great guy. I don't know. I don't like his work. I do not like the Jodie Whittaker stuff. And I feel bad because it's not Jodie Whittaker. I think she has the potential to be a great doctor. I think she has had great moments. I don't like the writing. I think it's just
okay.
It's dismissible.
I had a tough time getting into this doctor, so I've kind of put it on hold. Like, I got still saving the DVR. I haven't gone back to him yet, but I plan on it. But I've heard that, you know, people are pretty happy with her as the doctor. But
I think people are happy to see a female doctor, and I am too. And I think people are happy to see a diverse cast, and I am too. And I think that she's kind of found her personality as the doctor, and I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But
totally,
I don't know. I keep hearing that too, Lou. But then when I talk to individual people, they're like, it's just not as good. So I've yet to find an individual who I talk to who has been excited about anything beyond the concept of Jodie Whittaker as the doctor. Everybody loves her as the doctor. I'm like, yeah, what was your favorite episode?
Okay,
and they're
enough.
Like, I can't remember a single episode. And I'm like, then what does that tell you?
Well, yeah. And I got to say, that's where we're at too. I mean, we have watched every episode, every special, and you know, she's an outstanding doctor. Really, we've come to really like the whole thing, and I liked her evolution. I mean, her evolution kind of getting back into the persona of the doctor was more difficult and prolonged than any of the previous doctors had been. And I actually appreciated that, because you got this immediate fish out of water thing where, like, she knew that she knew stuff, but she didn't know it. She couldn't recall it, and she struggled with it, but she still problem solved, and the companions really stepped up and all that.
I felt like it went on too long, though.
It did go on a while, and there were too many companions. That got too convoluted. I understand what they were trying to do with it, but that created too much of a B or C storyline that kind of got really distracting.
Yeah.
It's the writing and the show running, which just really suffered. But she's a great doctor, and it's sad that, you know, that this is going to be her last season coming up.
Which brings us to the news item.
Yes.
Right, which is her last season. So season 13 will be the last season for her and the showrunner. They're both leaving at the same time. Mm-hmm. They said they wanted to do 3 seasons together, and then that was it. So
now they're going to do...
That was their plan.
They're going to do a trilogy of specials, mm-hmm. I guess. Kind of like the David Tennant departure. Or at least that's the impression I get. And I get the impression maybe they're going to go down to just one of the companions for that. There were some things that were said during the Comic-Con panel that kind of made me wonder about that.
I agree.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's going to just be, what's the character's name? Yaz?
Yeah.
I think it's maybe just going to be her.
It seems very much in line with how the last special ended, that it seems Yaz is going to kind of be the only one that is still continually connected.
I guess I need to watch that
to the doctor
last special then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. With how that last one wraps up, it doesn't make it definitive, but it does, it sets it severely on that path.
Okay. I wouldn't complain about that. Okay. Maybe like that'll help with this final season. I have to say, I'm not happy to see Jodie Whittaker go. All due respect to Chris Chibnall, because I can't imagine the amount of stress upon him as being a showrunner for one of the most classic television series of all time. This series
True.
Has mm-hmm. run for longer than any of us have been, any the hey. Most of us have been alive. Any of all of us, Lou, I guess, right?
Where's that drop from?
Yeah, Cole, but I'm still the one doing the streaming, so that.
Damn
yeah,
it.
Sorry about that. But yeah, I mean, it's been on since any of us and probably most of the listeners out there have been alive. This is like a big deal. And so all due respect to him as a showrunner, but I'm glad that maybe we're going to get somebody else in. So I'm not sad about Jodie Whittaker leaving. I'm okay with it, but it's not like I wanted it to happen. But I did want this guy to maybe move on to other things, and I'm sure he'll do well in other things. Don't hate the guy, but let's get somebody else in who can fix Doctor Who. Because it's been bad for, I mean, the Capaldi seasons, it was a struggle to get to a point where they were good.
Yeah, I had a hard time getting through the Capaldi stuff. And some of it was okay good. With it by the end. Yeah. By the end, I was okay with it, but it was a struggle getting into it. And then when they changed again, I'm like,
yeah.
And like, I didn't have the heart to keep up with it. So I just, yeah.
And this, I feel like they never fixed.
And the thing is, I like Peter Capaldi, but they really tried to play up particular personality traits way too much with him, mm-hmm. and that's what they allowed to basically drive the tone of his whole run.
I agree.
And I think that was too much.
I agree. I think it was a little too heavy-handed with him kind of being a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it got better, but yeah. Anyway, so that's the news on that. There's going to be one more season, and then I guess the three specials, and that's it. The rest of what we have in the news is just kind of lightning roundish sort of things, I think. You want me to just whip through these real quick here, Lou?
Sure, yeah. Right. If you have anything we can talk about, in depth, we'll go a little bit deeper into them. But yeah,
Netflix is developing a live action Pokemon series from the same executive producer as Lucifer. You know, the Detective Pokemon movie wasn't that bad. So if it's anything like that, this could actually have legs. This could work really well. I know my son's excited about it. What else? Universal obtained the rights to the Blumhouse follow-up trilogy for The Exorcist. I never got into The Exorcist. Of all the horror movies and stuff, if it's supernatural or spiritual or like monster stuff, just not my thing. Psychological horror movies, that's a different sort of thing, but I never got into The Exorcist. But
I mean, it's been forever since I saw the original Exorcist.
Yeah.
But
so,
and it was pretty creepy at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic series. Ellen Burstyn is going to reprise her role. So there's that. Snowpiercer just wrapped production on season 3 and apparently is already renewed for season 4.
Cool.
I got to say, I like having a series actually continue, especially like I'm still trying to maybe or maybe not watch Manifest because it's like, will they, won't they? I don't know. Yeah. So Snowpiercer, it's a good series, and it's nice to know that if you invest in it, it'll be around at least until season 4. And then two more things. We'll come back to the bigger one last, but Lou, you put in here, there's going to be a Waterworld TV series.
It's in early production right now. I saw this on, where did I see this? From Dark Horizons, I guess it was. Okay. They talked about they're having a continuation of the movie in a TV series. So it's going to pick up, I think this is 24 years after. Hmm. Yeah, 20 years after the events of the movie.
So Kevin Costner could come back in as his character then.
Yeah, he'd be, 24 years older. So, yeah. Hmm. I guess the movie ended with them finding dry land, right? That was the end of Waterworld.
I think so. I don't know. It was like a 6-hour long movie, so I don't remember.
It's a guilty. I do like watching Waterworld.
I know. You're the only person I know for whom Waterworld is a guilty pleasure. I like that. It was not nearly as bad as everybody gives it credit for. Like it had some rough moments, but it was okay.
Yeah, I agree.
It kind of better because I like the world building.
Yeah, the world building was really good.
Yeah. I think that it was an over the top 90s kind of movie. Yeah. You know, they had the villain was over the top and stuff, but it was still fun to watch.
It was all right. I think that this series could actually, this could work out really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the last
one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of, now that you've mentioned this is the first I've heard about it, I'm kind of optimistic about it. Suicide Squad has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. The official reviews.
This is actually the Suicide Squad.
I'm sorry, the Suicide Squad, right. Not to be confused with Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad.
Right. So this is the new one, not the old one. The press releases what's the word for it? Not gag order, but like the thing has been lifted. Nobody's going to help me out here.
Oh, what's the word? You're right.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I'm brain farting on this word. But anyway.
I
almost had it, too.
Yeah, so as soon as we hit stop on the recording, that's what it's called. So the restrictions on releasing the reviews have been lifted, and 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. For this type of movie, that's unheard of. Like, that's really, really high. That's like top of the MCU kind of. Mm-hmm. Percentages.
Yeah, that's a good number.
Yeah.
You know, when I was looking for stuff for the show tonight, there was an article I was reading on director's cuts. So the original 2016 Suicide Squad, not to be confused with The Suicide Squad.
Embargo. Thank you, Joe, in the chat room. Embargo.
There you go. Thanks, that's Joe. The word. Yes.
I'm thinking moratorium. No, that's not it. Okay. Embargo. I was thinking
abolition.
Right.
I guess, you know, the director of that, David Ayers, he had been pretty vocal about the cut that was released for Suicide Squad that was done by the studio. Yeah. He didn't have any involvement in that. And I guess it was had to do with the cut for the music that was put into it and all the cuts they made. And I guess the studio really revamped it after, was it Batman v Superman had bad reviews?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not the same thing as Justice League, but it was close. But yeah, they panicked when Batman v Superman came out and people were trashing it. And the studio, like, they just lost it.
Yeah, they hit the brakes and said, no, wait, we got changes.
So I'm not a big fan of the whole, I think it's cool to have a director's cut sort of thing. Like, I'm a big fan of Blade Runner and the director's cut and stuff like that. But I don't like this idea that, you know, the fan petitions and, oh, release the real cut and this and that. I mean,
right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially if it's just that you didn't like a movie or something. But this is one of those few scenarios where it's pretty well documented that Warner Brothers meddled from about halfway through production and just made, there was all kinds of Joker scenes that got thrown out. I mean, the stories.
Warner Brothers just has such an outstanding record lately of poor decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a poor decision to be made in movie production, like, they're my right default Jeopardy answer would be, you know, who is Warner Brothers?
Yeah. Warner Brothers, yeah, right.
Pretty much. I mean, what Fox and was for science fiction television in the 90s, Warner Brothers is for movies right now.
And I'm not even bashing Warner. I mean, I love the stuff that they put out. There's so much great potential for things. It's tough.
Yeah.
I think also a big part of it is it comes down to personality. It comes down to the agreements when contracts are signed. Because I've heard absolutely zero from James Gunn in terms of him saying, well, Warner Brothers made me do this, or Warner Brothers made me do that, or the movie you're getting is not what I made.
Right.
Because it's James Gunn. And when he signed the contract with Warner Brothers, he said, you're going to make my movie. You're going to release my movie.
Right.
Done.
Yeah.
So.
But he had a lot more leverage going into it, I think, than most directors do with Warner Brothers.
You know, and interestingly enough, he did, but he didn't, because this also, he got signed after he was canned by Marvel.
True. So, but there was a big,
kind of like,
but he also,
hey, big actor.
I kind of feel like he went in there and said, listen, you need me more than I need you. I'll walk.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think he just went in and said, listen, this is the contract. You can either sign it or you cannot sign it, but this is what we're doing.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You're right, though. I mean, it was, he was kind of in that point where, but I think that's part of why he survived that too, is because he put his foot down and said, no, this is like, here's the real deal. And this is how we're proceeding from here. Like, he was very decisive about his reaction to things. He was very decisive about the actions he took afterwards. And he had a lot of support from people. So, yeah, I mean, the timing was questionable, but I think that, yeah, he went in with some sort of leverage and with a lot of tenacity. I imagine that he was not willing to budge and, you know, take it or leave it. And frankly, at that point, like, Warner Brothers didn't have much else to lose. I mean, it's another Suicide Squad movie. If it sucked, will it suck as bad as the first one? I mean,
I like the first one.
I
a lot of people,
I like it too, until about halfway through the movie.
I thought it was pretty good.
I thought the ending was horrible.
I enjoyed it. I mean,
well, that's one of the things that, you know, David Ayer said his ending was better than what
I believe
was
that. See, that's the thing, Tim.
Had a lot of change at the end.
If we get to see the Ayer's ending, I think I'm going to agree with you because I didn't mind the movie and I thought it had a lot of good stuff in it. I just hate the ending. The ending is so bad. And if they can fix that, even a little bit,
that's fair.
Then I'll be with you. I don't think that movie's that bad.
Yeah, I don't either. But you know, and like what you said earlier, Eric, the whole thing about you know, fans holding studios hostage, say, "Oh, release this cut, release that cut." I disagree with that entirely. Mm-hmm. I like seeing director's cuts. I like seeing what was changed by whoever. And you know, certain movies that over the time I've seen, like Terminator 2 and Aliens, the subtle changes were made were okay. That's what they went for originally. I kind of like that better. I don't like that at all. That kind of thing. One thing that David Ayers is saying in this article I'm reading here is he's saying that we don't need to do any extra shooting. We don't need to do anything extra. My cut's already there.
Right.
We just have to release it.
Right.
So in terms of that, there's no extra costs associated with this that there was with...
I mean, some time in the editing room, but otherwise, no.
Yeah, well, he said the editing's all done.
Editing's complete, too.
That's what he said. Oh, he said, okay. Where was it in the article here?
It basically, it cost them more money to put out the version that they did because they had to recut
it. Well, right.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm just trying to find the relevant part of the quote here. He said, also, unlike the Snyder cut for Justice League, which required a bunch of costly post-production, his is already complete, just simply isn't being released.
Okay. I mean, if it's complete,
so
let's
see it. It's ready to go. And he had a quote in here saying, "I've never told my side of the story and never will. Unlike that old school. So I kept my mouth shut and took the tsunami of sometimes shocking personal criticism. I put my life into Suicide Squad. I made something amazing. My cut is intricate and emotional journey with some people who are expletive ton discarded.
Yeah.
The studio cut is not my movie. Read that again. My cut is not the 10-week director's cut. It's a fully matured edit by Lee Smith, standing on incredible work by John Gilroy." Mm. So he's saying the music is all done. It's not the, you know, stuff from the radio we hear put into Suicide Squad. It's not like
right.
You know, songs from the radio. It's just it's a real score for the movie.
Then Warner Brothers is sitting on money.
You would think they could release it and get money for it and put it out, but.
Yeah.
Wow. Good old Warner Brothers. All right. Well, that's all we've got for this episode. I think that covers it. So I think we'll wrap there. So don't forget Tuesday night at about 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, which should still be GMT minus 4, I think. Daylight savings time kind of throws me off. I keep thinking GMT minus 5. But anyway, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. We will be streaming live for Movie Chatter. We're going to be covering maybe a little bit of Gunpowder Milkshake, but primarily Jungle Cruise, the new Disney movie, which we think is pretty well worth seeing. Lou hasn't seen it yet, so we're going to see what he thinks. But Robin and I both liked it. We're going to be discussing that. And otherwise, we will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Well, maybe a little bit after that. We normally take a few minutes to get up and running, but we will be back next Sunday night with hopefully some Star Wars news, if any comes out. If not, maybe we'll have to come up with a cool discussion topic. And if you guys have any, let us know. In fact, go to randomchatter.com/escapehatch. That is the Discord server we hang out on, and you can let us know there if there are any Star Wars related topics you'd like us to cover. That's it, though. RandomChatter.com/YouTube. Hit the subscribe and like buttons and hit that little bell button to get notifications of any time we go live or post new content there. That is going to do it for this week. Thank you to everybody in the chat room hanging out with us. We will see you again.